Weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
Cambridge 105.
And Dom Smith is here now and has been looking through another Cambridge museum.
That's right. Let me try and get this right. The Sedgwick Museum of Earth Sciences.
What could you possibly get it confused with?
Not very much, but for normal people, that means basically geology.
Okay, so it's the Cambridge Museum of Geology, basically.
Basically, yes. Okay. Yeah. I was talking to them.
Well, this month I'm joined by Dr. Douglas Palmer. We're here at the Sedgwick Museum of Earth Sciences. I think that's the correct title, yep. Which is down on Downing Street. And we're going to talk about the exhibition that Dr. Palmer's been involved in creating just a few moments. But first of all, Dr. Palmer, what can we see around us? What, for people who haven't been to the museum before, what sort of things are there here?
The Sedgwick Museum contains a world-class and unique collection of fossils, minerals and rocks that have been accumulated over, in fact, 300 years. It has an international reputation because of this historic content and the fact that amongst the specimens we've got are some very, very historic specimens, ones that those who visit the museum will be familiar with, like the famous Iguanodon dinosaur. There's a wonderful skeleton of a hippopotamus from Barrington that, would you believe it, actually lived at Barrington during the Ice Age. And so there are lots of tremendous stories ranging from fossils like that through to perhaps one of the least prepossessing specimens in the museum, but historically one of the most interesting is a tiny little chip of grey rock which is on display, and the label says collected 40 foot below summit, E. Hillary, and that's 1952, year of the coronation. And of course it's a specimen from the top of Everest collected by Hillary when he was on his way down from that epoch-making climb. I think we're probably the only museum in the world to have a specimen collected on that particular unique climb at that time from the summit of Everest.
And I think you've also got a skull of a Tyrannosaurus rex outside.
We do indeed. It's one of the favourites with the schools that come here. Very, very impressive skull. It's a cast, of course, because unfortunately complete skulls of Tyrannosaurs cost millions of dollars these days, and we're very lucky to have specimens like that. Really got the wow factor. And in fact, some children, very young children, can actually be slightly frightened. So warning to parents when you come in, be careful, your three-year-old might be a little alarmed.
And the museum's collection, as I understand it, was originally bequeathed to the university by Dr. John Woodward.
Woodward is particularly interesting. I mean, he was a London physician who amassed a remarkable collection of what in those days were called fossils. But fossils then included things like minerals and crystals, because it still was being argued about as to the actual whether fossils really had an organic nature. And Woodward was one of the early people who argued that they definitely did. And so that was his collection has got specimens in it in which he's trying to demonstrate the organic nature of real fossils as opposed to the inorganic nature of things like crystals and nodules and things like that that can also be found, of course, in surface deposits. So Woodward's collection is immensely important, and it is unique in the world in the sense that he donated it to the university with certain conditions. It came with a professorship, and it is probably the only collection of that age going back to the latter part of the 17th century, early part of the 18th century, which has been on permanent public display and free to the public to observe ever since he left it to the university. So it's an amazing collection.
So we've just come over to the one of the other corners of the room here in the Sedgwick Museum of Earth Sciences, and we've got an interactive prototype in front of us. So can you explain a bit about what this is, please?
Yes, indeed. This is has been developed by Dan Pemberton, who's our collections manager in the museum, and it's a really quite innovative development. Now, Woodward's collection was all contained in a number of wooden cabinets, which we have still. Now, these wooden cabinets in the collection, because they are, they have to be conserved, so it's not a thing that we can normally make available to the public to see. You can look through and you can see the cabinets, but within the cabinets there are all the drawers, and the each drawer is filled with Woodward's specimens as he arranged them, and we've got a catalogue. Now, in order to make this available for people to actually sort of open the cabinet, look in the drawers, this is what this interactive prototype will allow us to do.
So yeah, this is a touch screen, and basically I can touch, and I think I should be able, if it works, to actually explore into the drawers of the cabinet.
Yep.
And so I can, even though I can't get into the room where these cabinets are, because obviously they're very sensitive materials, I can actually see, and I can actually get details of individual specimens. Fantastic. You mentioned a little while ago about having school children coming in. I know that one of the things the museum does a lot of is sort of education. You have sort of workshops.
Absolutely.
Available
yep.
for students, for children. And there are also activity boxes, I believe.
Yes, indeed. Our schools officer, Nicola Skipper, is extremely, well-organized, and she's got some great little sort of trails and things for school children to go in. There's, in fact, it's so popular that any schools thinking of coming have to be careful. They have to book well in advance, because the museum is well booked up for school visits. It's become enormously popular. And, of course, it's a great thing that it should be so, because hopefully out of all these children that get enthused, there will be some future professional geologists coming out of it. Children, and with their imagination, of course, when they see a dinosaur for a start, it's incredibly impressive. But they also are interested in a huge range of things. Some children can look at a cabinet display that's got, maybe 100 shells that are virtually the same, but are just, they're sort of, just see this sort of impressive array of things and think, what is all this about? And so one mustn't underestimate the imagination of children.
What I really love about these pieces, Dom, is the enthusiasm that comes out of the people you're speaking to there.
Absolutely. And I have to say that that Dr. Palmer was just a case in point of that. And we actually recorded a lot more material than we've got time to play today, unfortunately. It was really fascinating going on there.
Okay, we'll take a bit more of that in a few moments' time, talking about something specific which is happening at the museum.
Yeah, there is a specific exhibition that has just opened. It opened back in April, called Tools of the Trade, so we'll be talking about that.
Basically, it's about geological hammers. So hammers are an incredibly ancient instrument. I mean, I would argue that it's probably the most ancient tool that not just humans have used, but our hominid ancestors have used, because the very first hammer was actually a stone, and that was a stone used to break other stones. And we know from the record that actually such usage dates back 3.3 million years ago in Africa. But that's going a long way back. The emergency actual geological hammer, of course, comes really from medieval mining or earlier mining, where miners used metal picks to break rocks. And what's really important to say about this for anyone that's interested in geology and actually going out collecting rocks, a geological hammer is different from a carpenter's hammer. A geological hammer has to be able to hit quite hard rocks, and so it has to be properly tempered in a different way to, say, a carpenter's hammer, so that it doesn't splinter. Splinters from a hammer hitting a rock can be highly dangerous. They can burst like shrapnel. I personally, over the years, have seen bits fly off inappropriate hammers used in an inappropriate way. So anyway, apart from the health and safety note, if you're going to do geology, make sure you've got a good geological hammer. The profession of geology has, since the 19th century, really the hammer became a sort of iconic symbol for the profession. And if you look at the associations and societies of geologists, a lot of them use the geological hammer as part of their insignia, and medals for contribution to geology, again, often have the hammer as part of an embossed element to the design of such medals. So it isn't just a simple tool, it's possibly one of the earliest scientific instruments. You think, well, how is a hammer a scientific instrument? Well, a carpenter might just be using his hammer to knock a nail in or something like that. But for a geologist, the purpose of the hammer is partly to collect samples. In other words, you've got to break a piece of rock that you can actually carry off an outcrop in the field and be able to take it home. But more importantly, to actually see the details of what a rock is made up of, you need a freshly broken surface, because the results of sort of weathering and exposure of rocks to the elements often disguises the internal materials that a rock is made up of. So that by breaking off a lump, you expose a fresh surface that is then available for the geologist to look at closely. From the 19th century, one of the early professors, Thomas McKenney Hughes, thought it would be a good idea to collect together the hammers of some of the older geologists he knew. He knew their hammers would just be thrown away, so he thought, let's have them for the museum. And through his connections, he managed to amass a wonderful collection, including not just Sedgwick's hammers, but those of the Reverend Dr. William Buckland, who was famous, if not slightly notorious, academic in Oxford. He was one of the people who found some of the first dinosaur remains in Oxfordshire. When he found them in the early decades of the 19th century, this was before the word dinosaur had even been invented. So Buckland is extremely well known. One of the more recent hammers we've got belonged to Barry Rickards, who died just in 2009, but anyone who is a coarse fisherman probably knows the name Barry Rickards, because he wrote a vast number of articles and books about coarse fishing, especially about pike. In fact, when he died, the obituaries in all the national papers really said more about his fishing than about his geology, although as a paleontologist he was actually also extremely well known.
Excellent. It's a fantastic, very fascinating exhibition. Highly recommend a visit down here. Dr. Douglas Palmer from the Sedgwick Museum of Earth Sciences, thanks very much for talking to us.
Not at all. Thank you.
That was fascinating.
Absolutely, yes. I was a bit sceptical, I have to say, about a museum exhibition of hammers. But yes, absolutely, very interesting, very much so. And if you're planning to go down to the Sedgwick Museum of Earth Sciences, there's a couple of events coming up over the immediate future. So tomorrow, Saturday, the 18th of June, from 10 until 12:30, and then again from 1:30 till 3:30, there is an event called Prehistoric Sun Catchers. Children can go along and make their own sun catcher to see if they can find a prehistoric animal in the museum, which sounds interesting.
And they might very possibly do so.
And then as part of the big weekend down on Parker's Peak on the 9th of July from 12 till 4, they'll be in the Fun Lab on Parker's Peak, and they'll be having a look at what geologists of the future will find preserves in the rocks deforming today. What traces will there be of our civilization?
Oh, goodness.
You can have a go at predicting the future by making your own plaster fossil of the 21st century. So that sounds quite a fun activity. The Sedgwick Museum of Earth Sciences then open Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 and 2 till 5. Saturday, 10 till 4, closed on Sundays. And all the information is on the web at sedgwickmuseum.org.